M-A-R-I-A. Dot net.
Maria with an E, the mouth that roared, the Maria Heller Show. Number one show on the net for 4 years in a row. Though the mainstream press may be frightened, scared, and cowed, she's not afraid to tell the truth and to tell it loud. So watch out, all you Enrons, Halliburtons, Worldcoms, and Worldcons. She gonna shine, shine, shine the light of truth on you. She's the weapon of mass instruction.
M-E-R-I-A dot net. M-E-R-I-A dot net. M-E-R-I-A.
Well, good morning, world. Maria Heller here, back alive, kicking in Phoenix, Arizona. Hurry on down to the movies. Friday opens up Fahrenheit 9/11 throughout America, Michael Moore's movie. I'll be there, first show I can get myself into, and guess what? Today, that's just what we're going to be talking about. We're going to be talking about the movies, and I've got a great guest, David L. Robb. We're going to be talking about Operation Hollywood, how the Pentagon shapes and censors the movies. So you're not going to want to miss today's interview. And I'm going to start the show with one of my favorite groups, The Bots, Bushwhack 2. So stay with me. I'll be right back.
The best way to win an election is deliberate deception. Same thing happened in 2000. George Bush lost, and I know that. So let me just tell you what the facts are. Economic growth makes us dependent on foreign oil. And we set a goal. We will seek to rationalize natural resources. And Operation Iraqi Freedom, we're taking control of the oil fields. The only way to become less dependent on foreign sources of crude oil is to dominate the Middle East. We will rally the world to this cause by abandoning every value except the will to power. War is peace. Freedom is slavery. Anger is strength. Evil is good. Across Europe, America is using murder as a tool of terror and control. We have the opportunity to save millions of lives. We will come together to promote terror here at home. Any nation that continues to harbor or support tolerance of freedom will be regarded by the United States as a hostile regime. I have shown utter contempt for the United Nations. America will not accept human rights and democracy. And this nation is leading the world in confronting and defeating freedom.
I will use this moment of opportunity to bring depression and war.
We should also destroy the economy.
And I support regimes that sponsor terror. I will lead our nation toward a culture that values violence.
The American people need to be stopped.
It's time to bust this economy. Let's get it done, once and for all. I'm against working people.
My budget nearly doubles funding for weapons of mass destruction. We are arming to threaten the peace of the world. I ask you to pull all the murderous ideologies of the 20th century. The civilized world is rallying against us. I will not relent in waging the struggle for fascism, Nazism, and totalitarianism. And the dictator who is assembling the world's most dangerous weapons is ruling America. Members of Congress, Vice President Cheney, as we gather tonight, we constitute an axis of evil. We want to sap the soul and drain the spirit from our citizens. I'm sick and tired of democracy. As I mentioned to you, it's important for our citizens to understand fear. We've got the American people pretty well under control. See, democracy can't work, and it must be opposed. What I care about is money. I want to empower the wealthiest Americans because
war is peace, freedom is slavery, ignorance is strength, evil is good.
Yeah, we hope that everybody got the message that the brutal and lawless set history's course. Let's roll.
Okay, that song is by The Bots, TheBots.net. They've got great music out. They have a new CD out. And, boy, have we been bushwhacked. And not only bushwhacked, but we've been pretty much whacked by the movie industry for so long, too. I've discussed movies before with Robert McChesney. If you missed that interview, it's in the archives. Why it is we have such garbage movies in our theaters. And whatever happened to foreign films in America is in that archive. But today I have somebody really special with me that his book actually took my breath away. And being a movie freak as I am, as most of you know, I was totally drawn to this book. I've been reading it every day at the gym while I'm treading away. And everybody's like, what are you reading now? And I'm sharing the information with them. I have the author of Operation Hollywood, How the Pentagon Shapes and Censors the Movies. And his name is David L. Robb. David is an award-winning freelance journalist. He's been nominated for the Pulitzer Prize 3 times. He has published articles in the New York Times, the Washington Post, the LA Daily News, The Nation, LA Weekly, Salon.com, and Brill's Content. For many years, Rob was a labor and legal reporter for The Hollywood Reporter and Daily Variety. So you can bet that he knows his topic. And if you read the book, you'll totally agree with me. Anyway, without further ado, let me say good morning to David. Good morning, David.
Good morning.
How are you today?
Got a little bit of a cold.
Ah, okay. Well, you can fix that with the right vitamin mixture.
A cigarette.
There you go. David, what prompted you to write this book?
Well, years ago when I was at the Hollywood Trade Papers at the Variety and the Hollywood Reporter for 20 years, I'd heard that the military will cooperate with film producers and loan them, let them use the ships and tanks and submarines and airplanes, but you got to show them the script, and they have to approve of it. So I was wondering if there's any kind of a paper trail for this. So back in December of 2000, at the very time of the election was coming down and Bush took over, I was back in Washington, D.C., and I was going through the Pentagon archives, which they donated to the Georgetown University Library Special Collections Division. Hundreds of boxes of the correspondence with the producers over hundreds of films going back 50 years. So I went through these hundreds of boxes, tens of thousands of documents, and what I found was a stunning paper trail of a real, honest-to-goodness conspiracy between Hollywood and the Pentagon to put military propaganda into movies. And the deal is, if Hollywood will change their scripts and take out the negative references and put in positive references to make the military look good, then the military will help them. If they won't give them, if they won't make the script changes, the Pentagon won't give them the assistance. They have to make it on their own or not make the film at all.
Exactly, and I mean, I was pretty surprised. Although I shouldn't have been, but I was. I was pretty surprised to read through just how many films were manipulated in that way.
Hundreds of films have been manipulated. I look at about 75 films in the book.
Right, and the thing is, it's not just the film that's manipulated; it's the audience being manipulated.
Exactly right. The audience is being manipulated for two or three main purposes. The military's stated goal is they want to put positive images and sanitize negative images,
right,
to help the recruiting and retention of personnel. They found that when positive images of the military are shown in movies, this increases recruitment in the military. Mm-hmm. They also want, they target a Congress because they want congressmen go to movies, and if Congress has a positive image of the military, they'll approve the $500 billion Pentagon budget. And also, they want to influence older people so that when the older people that are too old to be in the military see these movies, those people are called influencers. We see these movies, and then we have a nephew or a niece or a son or a daughter. We say, yeah, the military is good. You ought to join up. So many people, if you talk to them, they joined the military because of some movie that they saw. They actually did. Or over the course of many years, many films that they've seen reinforcing this positive image. It's a form of brainwashing. It's subliminal advertising, really, because the audience doesn't know that these messages are being put in there, that
right,
inferences are being taken out. so that the military will look good and that people will join. The audience is being manipulated, and they don't know. And Congress, which has the oversight responsibility, has never really looked into this at all. They have done nothing.
Right. So in other words, it really is a form of mind control. You know, just put it out there. You know, it's really not even a subliminal. It's really in your face if everybody's all gung-ho. And
yes,
you've got
you
that patriotic buzz.
But you don't know that the product is in place there. You don't know that this is a collusion, a collaboration between Hollywood and the military. You don't know that this is a deal has been made to get you to join the Army.
I know, and reading your book really made that clear to me, because I have to tell you now, when I watch movies, I'm looking for, you know, for the Selective Service product placement in the movie, so I can tell whether or not the movie's mostly BS or not.
Well, the one sure way to tell is at the very end of every movie, which most people don't sit through, at the end there'll always be a thank you credit at the end. Thanks to the Marine Corps or the Army for their assistance in making this picture. If that little little title card is not there, then the military didn't help. And a lot of movies are very patriotic and pro-military anyway. The Hollywood loves heroes, so they're always going to be making... Yeah, policemen heroes or lawyers or doctors or whoever, and oftentimes it'll be military. They don't really need the military to be looking over their shoulder and telling them what to say. They'll make positive characters, but the Pentagon wants even more positive characters.
Exactly. Well, you know, I know you may or may not agree with this, but if you really think about it, the movie we were shown on September 11th and the specifically censored movies that have come out of Iraq since are also being used for people to say, oh, I have to go fight for my country now. You know, to me, one of the biggest stories is, you know, that football player that said, oh, I've got to go over there. I've got to do the right thing. I've got to fight for my country. Mr. Tillman, who ends up getting killed by friendly fire. So, you know, to me, the movies expands to, you know, most of what we see on regular news tonight, you know, at night, is a movie. You know, it's all so specifically made to make the whole country feel and react in a certain way.
Well, I think you'll find this in every country. News people, radio, television, reporters are patriotic. In every country, they're patriotic for their country. And so they're going to... People are by nature patriotic, but when you have the government telling movie companies to put in positive images and actually taking out negative images and coercing them and actually bribing them by offering them huge lucrative incentives, the free use of these aircraft carriers and submarines to make in their movies, then you have the government enforced patriotism, and that's what I object to. If a producer wants to make an honest-to-goodness patriotic movie, to me, that's art. He's free to do whatever he wants. But when the government starts offering bribes to make people more patriotic, that is very insidious.
Oh, I agree. And you have so many examples in your book of where actual true stories that really would have made the movie so much better were, you know, manipulated by the Pentagon into, you know, the story we actually see on the screen turns out to be like pablum compared to what the real story would have been. I would think if I was a writer, a screenwriter, or, you know, one of the authors of these movies, I would be really upset.
Well, some of them are, and sometimes they complain, and the producers complain, and the movie The Great Santini, which was based on it's actually a fictional book, but it was based on the true life of the author. The book.
Uh-huh.
His father had been a Marine Corps jet fighter pilot, and he wrote this story about his family life when his father was getting ready to retire from the Marine Corps. And his father, played by Robert Duvall in the movie, was this real jokester, always making pranks. And they had a scene in the film, which was nominated for an Oscar for Best Screenplay. And there was a scene in the film in which the father and son and another drill instructor are involved in this gag. It's a really funny scene. But the military, the Marine Corps said, no, this will hurt our recruiting. If you have this scene in there, it will hurt our recruiting. The producer begged them, we want this scene. This is the funniest scene in the movie. I have the actual correspondence, and it's in the book, about how they made him take out this scene. 9-page scene was eliminated so that the Marine Corps could meet its recruiting goals. They didn't want this the scene because they thought it would hurt recruiting. This, imagine any film that was nominated for an Oscar for screenplay, which this film was, and take out the funniest scene. This could have won the Academy Award. We'd never know what we're missing because the military is behind the scenes manipulating the content of movies.
Exactly. Well, I can tell you from personal experience, especially after reading your book, when I first heard about the movie Wind Talkers, I was so excited because I had learned so much about, you know, the Navajo Code Talkers, etc., you know, living in Arizona. And yet, when I went to see the movie, to me, the movie really fell flat. I didn't know why at the time, but the movie fell flat. And when I read your book on how much that movie had to be changed to please the Pentagon, I realized, wow, that's why the movie wasn't as good as it could have been.
Yes, that movie came out in 2002. It's a perfect example of how the military likes to sanitize movies to remove any hint or suggestion or actual depictions of war crimes. In the original screenplay, there was a character in the script called the Dentist, and after a big battle, this is taking place in the Pacific during World War II, after a big battle, the dentist is seen, he's an American Marine, he's seen creeping along the battlefield and with a bayonet pulling out the gold fillings of dead Japanese soldiers. The Marine Corps wrote the producers a note saying, this is un-Marine, this has to go. You can't have this in the movie.
Right, but if we look at Abu Ghraib prison, we see that worse things than that happened.
I wrote a story about this. I wrote a story about this for the Washington Post in 2002 about how they made him take out this scene.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody read my story in Washington, and they sent me actual archival footage of a real, during World War II, a real U.S. Marine in the Pacific with a pair of pliers pulling out gold fillings from a dead Japanese soldier's teeth.
Mm-hmm.
The face was half blown off and flies were buzzing around. This is the real face of war that the military doesn't want you to see in the movies.
Well,
that this really did happen. So this is really changing history. When they're saying this didn't happen, it did happen.
Right, but the scary thing is, you know it as well as I, David, when somebody goes to see, say, a movie like Pearl Harbor, to them, that's history. That's exactly the way it happened. No one will question something once they've seen it in a movie. It's sort of like, subliminally it becomes that person's reality. So if the Pentagon is messing around with the truth in those movies, then we are indeed getting nothing less than revisionist history on the screen.
Absolute revisionist history. A great example of this is what the military, the Pentagon, tried to do with the movie 13 Days, starring Kevin Costner. It was a story about the 1962 Cuban Missile Crisis.
Which I thought was a fabulous movie.
Thank God the producers, Peter Almond and Kevin Costner, refused to bow to the Pentagon's demands. They asked the Pentagon for assistance to help them with the jets and all the equipment they needed. The Pentagon says, well, we'll help you, but you have to tone down all of the portrayals of the military in the movie. Now, in real life, even before Nixon was taping in the White House, JFK had a taping system in the Oval Office, and it was working during the Cuban Missile Crisis in October, and it picked up all the conversations. You can go to the Kennedy Library on the Internet and listen to these actual conversations that were happening in the White House during the Missile Crisis.
I agree. And I mean, you know what, when you look at 13 Days, you can see how excellent. I mean, to me, that's one of my favorite movies. I watch it every so often when I need faith in some leaders somewhere. I mean, the Kennedys might have been a lot of things, but you know what? That movie really shows them at their finest hour.
Well, Curtis LeMay wanted to attack Cuba, to bomb Cuba, to invade Cuba. We now know Robert McNamara said in this recent movie, Fog of War, that Cuba had 70 nuclear-armed bombs in Cuba. It would have been World War III. It would have been nuclear war if we had invaded. If we had followed Curtis LeMay's, what he wanted to do, and all through the actual White House tapes, when Kennedy said, no, we're not going to invade, we're just going to put up a blockade, you can actually hear Curtis LeMay saying, this is the worst sellout since Munich, meaning the appeasement of Hitler.
Uh-huh.
He wanted to go to war, and Kennedy saved us from going to war. you got to tone that down. You got to make Curtis LeMay look less bellicose, less warlike, or we won't help you. Well, they refused to alter the real historical record, and they made the film that they wanted to make. They also tried to tell them, in real life, a U-2 pilot was shot down over Cuba. They had that in the script. They have, the Pentagon said, no, you got to take that out. That never happened. We don't want you to put that in there. They showed the Pentagon the letter that John Kennedy wrote to the pilot's widow, and they still said, no, you got to take it out. Thank God they refused, but they had to spend a lot more money. They had to go to the Philippines. They had to rent an old Air Force Phantom jet that wouldn't fly. They had to pull it behind a tractor on the tarmac there in the Philippines, and then with computer-generated imaging, make it look like it was flying. That's what they had to do. They had to leave the country to make that picture.
Right, which is pretty sick if you think about it. But you know what I have to say, though? Those producers, you know, I mean, should be getting an award just for standing true to what they believed in doing.
I named some of the heroes that stood up to the military. There's a few of those guys, but most producers end up caving in to the military. And really, the only thing that prevents the movies from being turned into complete propaganda machines for the military is the integrity of some Hollywood producers, which in Hollywood is kind of a joke.
Right. Well, you know, what really gets to me, you know, reading your book is, okay, we can look at it as, you know, this is what they've been doing to the movies, but, you know, as a kid who grew up on 50s and 60s television, to read that the military intervened in Lassie and in the Mickey Mouse Club really almost knocked me over.
Yeah, they target children because children are their future soldiers. And they try to get producers of children's television shows to put positive images of the military in these shows. In the old Mickey Mouse Club show, they used to have a segment called Mouse Reels. They were sort of little documentary films in which the children would go out and have adventures. And a whole bunch of their adventures ended up on military bases. And one of them ended up in a nuclear submarine. The very first nuclear submarine was called the USS Nautilus, and they went on board this, and the military shaped this whole documentary to make it look like nuclear submarines were a fun and happy place for kids to be. They really did this.
I believe it, because Disney just now is only willing to first re-release all the propaganda cartoons they put out during World War II, you know, making the military look great and all the enemy look bad.
Well, Carl Sagan, I think that people should be very skeptical about wild claims or conspiracies. Carl Sagan, a great philosopher and astronomer, said that extraordinary claims require extraordinary proof. Mm-hmm. What I've done in this book, I think, is really backed up everything with the real documents, the actual documents, the correspondence with the producers, the interviews with the people, with the military people. It's all documented. It really did happen. This is not something that happened 50 years ago during the Cold War and the McCarthy era.
Right.
Like the blacklist, something that it'd be interesting to know about and we should know about historically. This is happening today. This is happening right now. Right now, just a few miles from my house in Los Angeles, on the 11th floor of a tall building in Westwood, right by the campus of UCLA, the great film school, right near there. And the entire 11th floor is taken up by the U.S. Army, Air Force, Navy, Marine Corps, and Coast Guard film offices. And they do nothing but sit around and read scripts and tell the producers, take out this and put in this. They even suggest dialogue to put in instead. And then once you get approval from the military and you change your script to satisfy them, they send a minder onto the set to make sure that you shoot the picture exactly as you agreed with the military, which is completely antithetical to the filmmaking process. Scripts change all the time, but when you have the military involved, you've got to make sure that the minder is happy and you do just what you said, and then you have to screen the film for the military in advance before it's shown to the public. And oftentimes they show these films, the Motion Picture Association of America shows these films to the Pentagon in their offices in Washington.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a huge industry involved in making sure that the Hollywood gets what it wants and the military gets what it wants.
Right. Well, I don't think that it's a coincidence, although it could be, you know, some of the people that I realized in your book that said, you know, just say no to the military and Pentagon, like Oliver Stone and Kevin Costner.
Right, Oliver Stone said in an interview, he said that what the Pentagon is doing, they make prostitutes of us all.
Right, and it kind of, you look at their career after they turn down the big boys, and it seems like they're stopped every which way they turn. Even though Oliver Stone's done some fabulous movies, it looks like the scuttlebutt comes out ahead of the movie, and then the movie just doesn't do well. I think his most recent movie, the only place you could see it was online. I forget what the documentary was, I remember seeing it. But it's just crazy. And it's interesting to see, because, you know, if you start really looking, like I said, David, after reading your book, I can't watch a movie without looking for the signs.
Well, it pops up in places you never even suspect. On Home Improvement, there was an episode called Tanks for the Memories. For some reason, they decided they're going to go out and go through an Army tank course and drive tanks. This was an actual episode of Home Improvement.
Uh-huh.
And in the script, women in real life are not allowed to drive tanks. At least they were not at that time. And in the script, Jill, who is the guy's wife on the TV show, she got to drive the tank, and she did so well. In the script, the colonel says, "You did so well, maybe one day all tank drivers will be female." And the military censor said, "No, this politicizes the issues. This has to be taken out." So, of course, that little message was taken out. Clint Eastwood stood up to the Pentagon on the movie Heartbreak Ridge, which was set in modern era, but he's an old holdover from the Korean War. He's an old veteran. And they told him it involved the invasion of Grenada in the last scene. And he wanted to have a scene in which just somebody mentions, "Oh, by the way, 3 days ago there was the terrorist bombing at the Marine Corps barracks in Beirut," which in real life had happened. 3 days before the invasion of Grenada was the Marine Corps barracks that bombing. 250 Marines were killed. They said, "You got to take that out because we don't want any implication that the invasion of Grenada happened at the same time or was a cause and effect of the bombings of the Beirut Marine Corps barracks." He agreed to take that out, but he refused to take out a scene in which his character basically murders an injured Cuban soldier in Grenada. And they were so furious at him because he wouldn't change the script. They didn't put their thank you note on the card, and he was at that time the chairman of the Toys for Tots, which is the Marine Corps gift program at Christmas time. Everybody's familiar with that.
Uh-huh.
He wanted to premiere the film for Toys for Tots, but the military said, "No, we won't let you do it." And he was the chairman, and it wasn't. And they never had that because they're so small-minded, because he wouldn't do exactly what they wanted.
Right. Now, wasn't it Clint Eastwood that went over the head of the Pentagon, and was it that he went, did he write a letter or get in touch with
Reagan? No, he wrote
a
furious letter. He tried to get the assistant secretary of defense fired, and his name is Robert Sims, and they had a huge falling out. And Eastwood says, "I'll never make another picture with the military as long as you're there."
Mm-hmm.
Didn't.
Right. Well, you know, I got to tell you, first of all, I always liked Clint Eastwood anyway, but I had even greater respect reading that story in your book. I was like, "Yeah, baby." I was like, Clint Eastwood's all make my day.
Yeah, Clint Eastwood really, he stood up. And what they tried to do to Forrest Gump, see, you'll never know. Forrest Gump was changed a lot, even though it didn't get military assistance. In the end, they did not get assistance. They made it without the military. But they tried to take out all the funny things. There was a scene in which Forrest Gump shows his butt to Lyndon Johnson when Forrest Gump is getting the Medal of Honor. Lyndon Johnson says to him, "Where'd you get hit, son?"
Right.
He's over and shows him his butt. And the Pentagon says, "Mooning the president, that's not acceptable. That has to be taken out."
Mm-hmm.
They had caved in, as many producers did. A very cute and memorable scene in a movie would have been eliminated. And there's no telling, unless you read the book, how many great scenes have been eliminated from movies because the Pentagon made them take it out.
I agree, and after reading that, even though that whole segment on Forrest Gump, because understand, most days on my show, I'm doing the news, and a lot of the news that, you know, is coming out of Iraq, of course, the excuse of the Pentagon is, you know, with these people that are abusing prisoners there is, oh, how did these people get in the service? You know, they have such low IQs, etc. And then when I was reading your book about Forrest Gump and the fact that his whole platoon actually should have been what was really being tested during that war, which was a platoon of, you know, lower, how can we say, lower intelligent people, they actually did cave in and make it look like it was just Forrest and Bubba Gump.
That's right. They did change the script to remove that aspect of it. But the key thing to all this, I think, is to remember it's not just that they're messing with our movies, which is bad enough. They're also messing with the First Amendment. The First Amendment, first and foremost, says that the government cannot favor one form of speech that it likes and not give the same favors to speech that it doesn't like. This is clear established law. There's a famous Supreme Court case, Rosenberger versus the University of Virginia. There's a 1995 Supreme Court case, and they said it is axiomatic that the government may not regulate speech based on its substantive content or the message it conveys. Discrimination against speech because of its message is presumed to be unconstitutional, quote unquote. That's exactly what the Pentagon is doing every day, and they get away with it because nobody is sued, because nobody wants to rock the boat.
Well, another way of looking at it, David, if the Pentagon is giving, you know, so much financial help to a lot of movie producers, that's really our tax dollars paying to help produce movies.
Yeah, they're subsidizing the movie industry, and the only thing that Hollywood likes better than a good movie is a good deal, and this is a great deal for Hollywood. Hollywood likes it, the Pentagon likes it, everybody's happy, and nobody, the public, who is really the ones that are being put at a disadvantage, they don't even know about it until now.
No, so we're paying for the movie to be made, to be censored, or to sway us one way or the other mentally, and then we pay to go see the movie.
And then you join the Army.
And then you join the Army right afterwards. Well, I don't know, I don't have any big urge to do that one just yet. David, I need to take a short break. When we get back, I definitely want to continue this because this is like my number one favorite thing in the world is the movie. So I'm going to ask my listeners to stay with us. We'll be right back. Okay, I'm back. I'm speaking live with David L. Robb, the author of an very impressive book, Operation Hollywood, How the Pentagon Shapes and Censors the Movies. David, before the break, we were talking about so many different things, but one of my listeners sent me this news story, which I just got this morning, and if I didn't know, I'm sure you probably don't, but maybe you do. It's off the Washington Business Journal. This one really is like the nail in the coffin. Carlyle Group, it seems, which, of course, you know, has included as directors of it former President George Bush, Colin Powell, James Baker, and British Prime Minister John Major, is now one of three investors that have agreed to buy Lowe's Cineplex Entertainment. And they're actually going to buy out Lowe's Theater, which is the third largest movie theater chain.
Yeah, they were making a bid a few months ago to try to buy Universal Studios.
Right, so talk about censorship. Okay, what kind of censorship are we going to be seeing in the movies if the Bush family's behind it?
Well, President Eisenhower, in his farewell address to the nation, warned us, I think, a great warning. He said, it's very famous, beware the military-industrial complex. What we're seeing now is the military-Hollywood industry complex, where the military and Hollywood have sort of melded together to create this, what you have is the world's most powerful medium, mm-hmm. and the world's most powerful military in collusion to create this scenario in movies that completely sanitize what war is all about. They don't show the horror of war. They want to show just the camaraderie and the heroism of war.
Exactly. Make it look like it's something, you know, everybody wants to do, like it's a video game until you get there.
And I think this is you have to wonder, 50 years of propaganda being put into mainstream films and TV shows, has this had no effect on the national conscience? Has this had no effect? I can't believe it hasn't. This country is so much more warlike now than it was 60 years ago when we had to be dragged into World War II.
Well, yeah, if you remember, right before Iraq, Afghanistan, and all that madness, Hollywood seemed to be sending out a lot of war movies. And whenever I see that there's a theme of a lot of war movies, you know, where it's really glorifying war, I say, uh-oh, we're getting ready for something. And it's never let me down. You know, I'm in my 50s, and I've watched this pattern in the movies. And, you know, especially, you know, when they show, you know, Pearl Harbor, the whole movie based on a lie, and so many other things. And then, you know, you get these kids like, you know, like Tillman, you know, who says, wow, this is real. I got to go to fight and defend my country, even though, of course, Iraq had nothing to do with 9/11. But it's all the media. And what you said about the First Amendment is so true, David, because now the FCC is suing radio for saying anything off color when we're supposed to have freedom of speech in this country.
Yeah, well, supposed to.
Unless, of course, you're Howard Stern and you say something bad about George Bush, then the freedom ends there. But now you have the same people buying out Lowe's Theater. So, you know, if it wasn't for your book, I don't think that I would have had the keen eye to even notice that news article as a huge article. And I can't thank you enough for writing this book, because it was amazing. And I'll share something with you. When you first sent me this book, I had just had Barr McClellan on my show. And I don't know if you're familiar with Barr. But Barr McClellan actually is the father of Scott McClellan, who works as Bush's press secretary. Well, Barr McClellan, believe it or not, is in a big lawsuit with Jack Valente over something that was shown on the History Channel about the JFK assassination.
Oh, about Johnson's involvement?
Exactly. So when I got your...
assassination?
Yes. So when I got your book and I read your little chapter on Jack Valente, I think he gets like the black star of the book in here.
Right.
I immediately got in touch with Barr McClellan and let him know what you had written. And he was so grateful. He was like, wow, you're like really on top of it with this news. But I said, you know, you have no idea just how deep this guy's involvement goes. And actually, I think in your book you call it, it's in the heroes and villains category.
Right, I have a chapter on who.
Right, so for how many years do we sit back and watch the Academy Awards? Jack Valente comes out like a big shot, and everybody's clapping for him, and we don't realize we're clapping for one of the biggest censors of all times.
Yeah, he actually screens these movies for the military before they're shown to the public. He's and another, even I think even more shocking, is that the Writers Guild of America, which is the union for the screenwriters, they claim that they... Their two main goals are to protect the economic and creative rights of their members. Here the government is taking their members' screenplays, rewriting them, reworking them, sanitizing them, changing them, manipulating them, and the Writers Guild has never once filed a single complaint.
Unbelievable.
And they know what's going on. They do nothing.
So how can they be okay with that? I mean, I'm an artist, okay, I'm not a screenwriter, but when you're creating, you can't have any limits on your creativity. I mean, how can they be okay with that?
Well, the head guy at the Writers Guild is a guy named John McLean, and he told me that they don't want to chase after blue whales. And I asked, what does blue whales mean? And that means things that they can't get at the negotiating table. They don't want to go to the bargaining table and say, oh, by the way, in the future, we don't want our member scripts to be censored by the military or to be even be shown to the military before they're produced. He said the producers will never go along with that, so why even bother to ask for it? At least you could ask for it and put them in the position of saying no and at least raising the issue.
Mm-hmm.
They just have caved in like everybody else.
Well, you know, the producers, as you show in your book, and incidentally, your book has made me rewatch so many movies that I've watched before, David. But I rewatched Good Morning Vietnam. And obviously the producer of that movie knew not even to bother asking the Pentagon for help because of the subject matter in the movie.
Well, a great movie to watch and read the book and then watch the movie, and you'll really see what a travesty they've done. It's an old movie called Battle Cry. It's a great movie, has a great cast, and it was written by Leon Uris, and the movie was set in World War II, and it follows 8 Marines from boot camp to Guadalcanal, and one of the characters in the movie is a Navy medic named Pedro, a Hispanic character. he, throughout the movie, is subjected to, not throughout the movie, but throughout the original screenplay, is subjected to constant racism from a character played by the actor Fess Parker, who shortly after this movie was made became the character Davy Crockett. But in Battlecry, Fess Parker was constantly calling Pedro a spick, a Mexican, every kind of negative stereotype you can imagine. They were always fighting. They had a big fight at a bar, and his friends separate him, and Pedro finally has his big scene, and he says that Pedro is sad to be in the Marine Corps. He only came to the Marine Corps to learn how to be a medic so he could go back to Texas and take care of the sick and dying, starving children in Texas in the filth of Texas. The Marine Corps said, this has to go, or we won't help you with the movie. This has to be taken out. The film was actually shot, and they actually edited these scenes out of the movie. All of the entire character of Pedro was taken out of the movie, including the final scene in which, at the end of the movie, Pedro was killed. At the end of the original script, Pedro was killed, and Fess Parker comes to his gravesite, and now he realizes that he was wrong for being a racist and says, well, I guess it's too late to apologize, to say I'm sorry to Pedro. None of this is in the movie because they made him cut out this scene. And the military said in their actual notes, the commandant of the Marine Corps says, this speech by Pedro would not only be objectionable to Texas, to Texans, but Americans as well. It would be put to good use by communists who are sure to use it out of context. So this whole character and the actor who played this role, who shot the whole movie,
right,
he never even knew why his role had been cut out of the movie until I showed him these documents 50 years later. He never knew why. His whole life. This is a great role for an Hispanic actor, a great actor named Victor Milan, who's been in so many great movies. This would have been one of the great roles for an Hispanic actor back in the 1950s to really actually talk about important issues of racism.
Right, so it probably killed his career from what it would have been.
It killed his character. It really broke his heart.
I could only imagine. It must have been a nightmare.
He couldn't even have the day before the premiere, his agent called him and said, I have good news and bad news. The good news is you're invited to the premiere. The bad news is you're not in the picture anymore. He didn't even go to the premiere. He sent his wife. She cried all the way through the movie because he wasn't in the movie anymore.
It's really, really terrible, and I've read so much of it, you know. David, let me just read a little bit off your book, Revisionist History. This is the chapter name. Just one little paragraph, because I made so many notes all over your book. It's amazing. But it's obviously a quote by somebody, a director, I think, about the military. It says, as we've seen, the military has its own version of history, and the main reasons the service branches want filmmakers to make that history look better than it really was is so the American people will have a positive opinion about the military, will continue to fund it, and will continue to join up. It's all about funding and recruiting. I mean, these are such powerful statements in here. And like you said, David, I was shocked to see all the legal papers that you got and all these copies of letters from the Pentagon and officials actually, you know, saying, you know, change this, change that, we're not doing this, we're not doing that. I was like, wow.
They're amazingly candid. They wrote these letters not thinking anybody's ever going to see this stuff. They're amazingly candid in their role as censors.
Exactly. I mean, it's so out there. I have to tell you that even though the print was small, I made sure to read what they all had written. And, I mean, we're talking from, you know, the Office of the Assistant Secretary of Defense. And you would think, what does he have to do with a movie? You know, the average American will never make the connection, David, without your book.
This would sound, if you didn't know better, it'd sound like something that's happening in the old Soviet Union or something, you know, but it's happening right now. Right here.
Right, exactly. And if, you know, if they're grabbing the movies and then, you know, through private investment now, the same military industrial people grabbing up the movies, we are going to be living in, you know, nothing but, you know, Big Brother propaganda 24 hours a day.
Well, this is very insidious propaganda. In North Korea, they actually have in people's homes boxes or speakers that pipe into your house propaganda and music, but mixed in with real propaganda, and you can't turn it off.
Uh-huh.
Here, you can turn it off, but you don't even know when you're watching it that it's on. You don't even know that it's propaganda, because it's just been placed into the movie seamlessly, and you don't even know that what you're watching has been sanitized by the military. When you watch a video cassette, a little thing comes up at the beginning. It says, this film has been modified to fit the format of your screen. Well, they'll tell you that, but they won't tell you that this film has been modified to help the military meet its recruiting goals.
Well, well put, for sure. But you know what? I don't want my audience to think that this is just about war movies that the censorship exists. I mean, one of my favorite movies, I mean, just for a wild ride, has always been Independence Day with Will Smith.
Yeah.
So, and of course, I love Jeff Goldblum. But even that movie was tampered with. I mean, it's like the more I read your book, I was like, Lord, is there like any movies? I mean, do they even tamper with cartoons?
I haven't found any cartoons.
I mean, it's like, okay, they're everywhere. But, I mean, when you're watching something like Independence Day, which is pretty much just, you know, a fun, adventure, space-age kind of crazy movie, you would never think the military had anything to do with that.
Well, the military ended up not supporting that picture. They didn't give them anything. But on the way, the producers agreed to change so much. Many of the changes that they had agreed to make the military look better, stayed in the script. So the military got a lot of what it wanted anyway.
Right, so then it's kind of sad that then the producers don't go back to the original script, because I'm sure we're losing so much in the film.
Yeah, but the military just could not get over the idea that that there was space aliens and that they're being kept at Area 51. The military will never help any movie that has aliens, because they don't want to continue to foster any thing that they're...
Don't you think that that just makes them look all the more guilty? I mean, to me, if you have nothing to hide, put it out there, you know. But, yeah, I have to say, your book just continued on and on. I have to tell you, like I said, I got a lot more respect for the people that do stand up to the Pentagon, because obviously the Pentagon doesn't make it easy. But then you were also talking about, and I remember it was later on in the book, about people that were actually working, and correct me if I'm wrong, people that were actually working on the Pentagon side on this movie deal, that actually was stealing equipment from the Pentagon and renting it to moviegoers, I mean movie producers.
There's some, they've all been indicted now, so they're either in jail or on their way to jail. They've, some guys out here at in the Army Reserves were requisitioning military equipment and machine guns and then renting it to the movie industry.
Uh-huh.
There was another case on a movie called The Final Countdown, in which a nuclear aircraft carrier gets in a time warp and goes back to Pearl Harbor on the eve of World War II with Kirk Douglas. And the guy was in charge of the airplanes, and the military does charge. If you're making a movie and they take a jet off the aircraft carrier just for you to film it, they'll charge you for the gas. They don't charge you for the wear and the tear on the airplane or the time of the pilot or anything, but for the gas they charge you.
Uh-huh.
The guy who was in charge of keeping track of the hours of flight to pay for the gas got indicted and convicted of taking an illegal gratuity. He was accused of taking a bribe for underreporting the hour so that the producers could save money. It leaves all kinds of, when Hollywood is in business with the military, mm-hmm. leaves all kinds of avenues for Hollywood's corrupt business practices to also corrupt the military.
Exactly. I have a question from one of my listeners. Maybe you'll know the answer. He wants to know if movies like Close Encounters and E.T. were censored at all by the military.
No, not to my knowledge. I don't think they were.
Now, there was a juicy one, and the juiciest story, and almost knocked me over again, David, was Chapter 34, where the Pentagon, supposedly unknowing to them, backed a movie by Sun Myung Moon.
Yeah.
Oh, God, how embarrassing could that have possibly been?
Well, some congressmen were very angry, and the documents make very clear that if they had known that this had been funded by a Reverend Moon, they would have never taken part in helping this movie. Which raises a very interesting question. Is there now a religious litmus test for who the Pentagon will help? Billy Graham has actually produced several movies. Is he going to be given special treatment because they like his brand of religion, but they don't like this other guy's brand of religion?
Well, of course he is.
The Pentagon and the government is involved in regulating and funding speech. It raises so many constitutional questions, it just should stop immediately.
Oh, I agree, but I mean, your book does not run out of surprises, David. And, you know, I read a lot of books to do my show, but yours, I mean, it kept me riveted the whole time. It's like, wow, there's like, where does this end? Does this end anywhere? John Wayne, it really, you know, first of all, intuitively, for some reason, I never liked John Wayne, and I never liked any of his movies. You know, it kind of bothered me if I was watching a really good movie and he was in it. There was just something about him personally I didn't like. How much was John Wayne, especially the movie Green Berets, used to pull off this propaganda for the armed forces?
It was a total propaganda film. It was totally subsidized by the military. They paid for everything, even the gas, everything. There was actually a government, Congress, the one time they looked into this was to see whether the government was funding this, and that's when they made them stop. The government couldn't fund these pictures anymore. They had to charge them for the gas. But this was a total propaganda film, so much so, there's a document that I found that's in the book, that instead of the usual credit at the end, thanks so much to the U.S. military for their assistance in making this picture, they decided to leave that off because the Pentagon thought it would make it look like it was a propaganda film, which it was. There was a scene in that movie, in the original script, in which John Wayne's character is standing by. He's a colonel in the army over in Vietnam, in which he stands by and watches a Viet Cong prisoner being tortured by a South Vietnamese officer. The military says, you have to take this out. It'll just be just for opponents of the war. So, of course, they took it out. They took out and that's one reason why Americans are so shocked by these pictures coming out of Iraq of the prisoner abuse, is because so many of the movies have had been sanitized and taken the torture and war crimes out of the movies because the Pentagon doesn't want that in there. They don't even like jokes about war crimes. And the movie Stripes, which is a lot of the book is very funny because there's so many bizarre, silly things that the military does. There was a joke in the movie Stripes with Bill Murray, a comedy.
Oh, I loved that movie. Now I know I would have loved it more if they didn't mess with it.
It would have been a much better film. There's like 22 examples of changes that they made in that movie. And one of them was they were making a joke about joining the army so we can go and rape and pillage.
Uh-huh.
That has got to go. You can't have that line in the movie or we won't help you. And so they took the line out.
Right, but in reality, that is what we do.
Yeah, but they don't even want jokes about it.
Uh-huh.
Sensitive they are. So what you're getting in the movies is it's a form of brainwashing.
Well, obviously, brainwashing and mind control, because, you know, a lot of these movies do leave you thinking, you know, rah, rah, let me go out and sign up, obviously.
That's why they make them.
Right, so they're kind of pandering to, you know, young people, you know, who are going to get all jazzed, especially the new movies now with all the gadgetry of war, where they really do make it look like it's, you know, just another video game.
Well, in Independence Day, the producer, when he was trying to get assistance from the military, he wrote a letter to the military saying, if this Star Wars has got nothing on this movie, if this movie doesn't make every kid want to go out and fly jet planes, I'll eat this script.
Exactly. So, I mean, talk about prostituting yourself and your work.
Yeah.
I mean, this is like the ultimate in prostitution. And it's, once again, the average human American, you know, citizen, patriot, taxpayer that's getting the short end of the stick.
Yeah, and Congress and the Writers Guild have just gone right along with this and just letting them get away with it.
Right. Now, David, I know that you had to have worked so hard to compile all this information for this book. But I must ask you this, and I know I think you said you have 75 movies in here you're talking about. Has anyone else besides myself, which I'm just about to present to you, asked you to perhaps make a list of all these movies available online or some way where people can go in and check the movie before they see it so they know either if they want to see it or what to look for?
No, nobody's asked me to do that. That's a good idea. I have a website. It's operationhollywood.org. And I'll try to put up that, a list of films that were, that's a good idea, a list of films that were changed, the content of the movie was changed at the military's insistence.
Right, and I think, you know, even like with new movies, I mean, I don't know about you, I mean, I try to see, you know, any movie that looks that has any worth to it at all as soon as it's out. I mean, imagine people going and saying, well, let me go check David Robb's column to see, you know, what the skinny is on this movie before I go spend money on it. And it could be another way of you helping the Pentagon to be more patriotic and back out of our First Amendment.
Well, not surprisingly, the Pentagon, halfway through my book, they realized what I was doing, the questions I was asking. They sort of cut off access. So I'm not really able to get access to these same documents anymore because they have shut down the flow.
Right, how unusual. But the truth of the matter is, like I said to you, David, after reading your book, I know what to look for now.
Yeah, you know what to look for.
So I know you know what to look for. I would rather read a movie review by David Robb than anybody else right now, I can tell you that. So, can you tell you have a new fan?
Thank you.
But it's the truth of it, and I don't remember which movie I just saw, and I was watching it with my boyfriend, and he says, oh, I wonder if the Pentagon had anything to do with this. And I said, no, it couldn't have, because if you paid attention, the helicopter didn't have any kind of symbol on it for any of the armed forces. So, you know, it kind of has now given me, you know, new eyes to watch movies with.
Well, the easiest thing, if there's any negative reference to the military or if it's any kind of anti-war statement, you can guarantee it was not funded or helped by the military.
Right. David, our time is up. I have to thank you. This was a great interview. Thank you for the work you did. I know it took a lot of courage to put this together.
Well, thanks so much. I really enjoyed it. It was really fun.
Oh, it's been my pleasure. And keep me posted on any new stuff.
All right.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
You're welcome. David Robb, Operation Hollywood, How the Pentagon Shapes and Senses the Movies, and we are Land of the Free, Home of the Brave, and if you believe that, believe me, I've got quite the beach I want to sell you here in Phoenix. Tomorrow I'll be back with the news and review of my weekend with David Icke. Thanks for listening, thanks for supporting the show.
Maria with an E, the mouth that roared, the Maria Heller Show. Number one show on the net for 4 years in a row. Though the mainstream press may be frightened, scared, and cowed, she's not afraid to tell the truth and to tell it loud. So watch out, all you Enrons, Halliburtons, Worldcoms, and Worldcons. She's gonna shine, shine, shine the light of truth on you. She's the weapon of mass instruction.
MERIA.net. MERIA.net.